I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating our 20th year in business, pretty exciting, and we're just entering our seventh year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes to open line. First, we have introduced a new 2014 format that comes with the launching of our new site, which you can all enjoy afterwards by browsing around. Plus, we have a new book coming out, Cracking the Business Code, and it will be coming out in March 2014. And David Walker has a lead article on leadership, which, again, we're very excited about. And Lighthouse has been growing at a very rapid pace over the past 36 months, and you can read about that also on our website. Our topic today is three do's and don'ts for leading and managing. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments and raising the hiring bar, and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information on that topic, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally. I'm very excited. We have individuals from all over the world joining us today to address the business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so those of you that are attending live on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights we have along the way. And at the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. You'll also want to have some paper and pen handy to take notes so you can share ideas that you may want to consider to implement with your team and discuss with your trusted advisors. I want to introduce our guest. Our special guest with us today is Paul David Walker of Genius Stone Partners. Paul is a longtime friend, a cool guy, and an amazing business person. Paul is the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius. If you have not read that book, I would highly recommend you get it and also get it for your team members because it makes a great discussion topic. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for well over 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing firms, global utilities, service and consulting organizations. And Paul is the founder of Genius Stone. I feel privileged to have Paul with us today to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our 20th anniversary open line programs, which we are calling Talent Strategy Weeks, will begin at the end of today's program. The topics will include advanced sourcing, getting top talent through social networking. On another day, we will be discussing the workforce of the future, 10 things to consider today. And another topic on our third day, are your salespeople an issue or is it something else? Paul, I want to welcome you to Open Line once again. We always love having you on our program.
Well, thank you. That was a great introduction. And we'll get started here. So this is fun and a good time for this conversation because oh, I see. The do's are first. Okay. We'll go to the don'ts later.
That's right.
But, you know, you've got to know yourself. You know, all the great teachers in the world say, know thyself, you know. So you got to start with yourself if you're a leader. You got to know what you're good at, what you're not good at. Nothing worse than, you know, someone who thinks they're good at something and they're not. A fun example is if you've ever been to a party and there's somebody out there dancing who thinks they're a great dancer and They're just awful. It's just embarrassing. Of course, no one will tell them. But if you think you're a good leader and you're not, that has more ramifications, you know, than thinking you're a good leader. So you got to know yourself first. And, of course, you must know your business. I mean, you have to know your strengths and the weaknesses of your business. Now, what I found is most leaders think they know their strengths, but don't want to focus on their weaknesses. And you've got to know both. You've got to have a really clear picture of what it is you do well, as opposed to what you think you do well. And in order to get that, there are a lot of different techniques you can use. You can do, you know, market surveys. You can do customer surveys. You can, you know, look at the finances. You know, your financials are going to tell you what's working and what's not. But we all have a tendency to need to be right. And, of course, you want to be right when you're planning your business, but you don't want to be right when you're evaluating where you are in the business, because I just came from a client, and they're doing things that were right 10 years ago. And things have changed dramatically, you know, since the financial crisis. And the hardest thing to change and be honest with, in terms of being honest with yourself or honest with your business, is all the things you used to do that worked to get you where you are today. Those are hard to change, but probably a hidden awareness that you need to have about your business. And in order to uncover that, you've got to do some research. You've got to look in and really know. You get opinions from the outside. We always like to set up our customer-facing people, customer service people, inside salespeople, salespeople. They're your best market researchers. And I always like to have my clients periodically, maybe quarterly, you know, do a customer scorecard or a customer survey where the customer-facing people are just asking them informally, so what do we do that is so effective for you that you like? Why do you keep working with us? And how could we be more effective, even more effective? We want to serve you better. How could we be even more effective? And if you've got your people continuously asking those kinds of questions, you're going to have a pretty good handle on what you do well and what you don't do well. And then you can take action. Now, I know a lot of my clients go, oh, geez, we start asking our customers questions like this, you know, it's gonna be ugly. Well, it's better that you ask them and you find out what's working and what's not working than them talking behind your back and them taking actions that you might not understand. And we found years ago in retail, we suggested to our clients that we asked the customers how we could serve them better, and they went, oh, geez, oh, God, don't do that. You know, we can't afford to change anything. We said, well, let's just try it in a couple of stores, see what happens. Well, we had three stores. One, we'd ask the questions of the customers, collect their answers, and do nothing. Two, we'd ask questions how we can make the business more effective, how we can make the service more effective, and make some changes, right? And three, we didn't do a survey at all. We didn't, you know, nothing changed. We didn't ask customers any questions. Well, the second one and the first one, where we asked them how we could improve things and didn't do anything, and where we asked them how we could improve things and actually made some changes, had a 10 to 15% increase in sales, whereas the group where we didn't do anything remain flat. So it's just the effect of showing your customers that you care about them, that you want to do better, oftentimes, you know, has a real positive effect on your business growth, because they see that you're listening to them, and it just works like magic. There are a lot of ways to do this, but keep up to date. Don't get behind. And challenge your instincts. I mean, we all develop instincts during certain periods of time in our business, and you got to update those instincts. You know, if your instincts are old, if they come from a time that's passed, it can be a problem. So really keep an eye on yourself. Be relentless about understanding who you are as a leader so you're not out there doing things that look foolish, and what your business strengths and weaknesses are. Keep them up to date, at least annually, if not biannually. You know, look into it. Try to find a way out. Second bullet point. Once you know your business, once you know where you're going, you know, part of that is in understanding your business is knowing what the window of opportunity is for you and for your business, where you can convert a customer need into a customer want. Let me just define terms here. Customer need is something you can see they need regarding your product or service. Customer want is something they want. They're conscious of it. So, you know, the first thing is you build this compelling picture of the future that you, of your company and your relationship with your clients. And that compelling picture is important because you cannot create something you cannot conceive, nor can your customers relate to some kind of vague, you know, vision statement. It's got to be a really concrete, compelling picture of the future that you can help your clients create. And I can't tell you how important this is, not only for your clients, but also for your employees. Now, research was done at the Alameda Institute, and this was some 15 years ago, on cognitive retention. And the research indicated that 85% of people in North America and Europe, this is where the survey was done, can only hold a mildly complex cognitive framework in their heads for 2 weeks. I repeat this. 85% of people in America and Europe can only hold a mildly complex cognitive framework in their head for 2 weeks. Now, a mission statement is a mildly complex cognitive framework. It's not a strategic plan, right? But you've got to remember every 2 weeks, you've got to refresh this in people's mind. Tell you a story. Back in the old days when Jack Welch was such a great CEO, having created General Electric to be the most profitable company in the world, we had an opportunity to interview him for one of the books we were doing. And, of course, we had to wait in the conference room for him to come out of a speech in a hotel somewhere. And so we're waiting, and he's late. So he finally comes in, you know, and he says, "Oh, you know, I'm really sorry for being late, but I had to go to the men's room and throw up." And so chairman of our firm said, "Well, are you sick, Jack?" He says, "No, I'm sick of myself. Every time I give a speech, I have to repeat the three same things over and over again, and I give two or three speeches a week, and I'm getting sick of hearing myself." Well, why did he do that? Because he hadn't read that study, but he knew, being an experienced leader, if you don't keep repeating that compelling picture, that mission statement over and over again, people will forget. If you remember, Jack, GE had three things, the first of which was be number one in your market. I can't remember the other two, frankly. But Jack would repeat those over and over again. And a good leader will do that. Now, I don't know how many leaders I've worked with that said, "What do you mean they don't understand the mission?" And we told them what the mission is at the annual meeting. Well, you know, 6 months later, most people don't remember it. Honestly, it's not they're stupid. It's just they don't remember. They're busy. They don't keep their eye on the ball. So your leaders need to be constantly framing up that compelling picture of the future and how to create it and what we need to do to create that picture to keep everybody on track. And just to finish those statistics, you know, 85% cannot hold a mildly complex cognitive framework for more than 2 weeks. There's a bell curve within that, of course. 10% can hold that framework in their heads, and there's a bell curve there. And 5% can hold it in their heads and do what-ifs with it. What if this? What if that? And they can see the ramifications of, you know, actions that have yet to occur. So if you're one of the 10 or 5%, then you're probably a leader. But know that most of you people are going to need reinforcement of that compelling picture of the future. So
Paul, a question just came in. So does that mean, maybe a two-part question, that repeating it over and over again to senior team or have it repeated to everybody, whether they are at the janitorial level, receptionist, admin, and everybody in between?
Well, everybody, but the picture is different for different parts of the organization. So certainly you need to repeat the overall mission. Here's where we're going. Here's why we're going. Here's why it's so important. You know, the why, what, and how. You've got to have that. But as you go to different parts of the organization, it might look different. The sales organization might look different than the manufacturing organization, for example. So part of the overall mission might include manufacturing being more efficient, maximizing EBITDA. Part of the sales mission, while EBITDA and pricing is important, but you might be asking them to get into certain markets that the company hasn't been in the past. And so over and over again, your leadership at every level needs to have clear missions, clear pictures. Here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Here's how to do it. And you've got to repeat it at every level in a way that's meaningful to the employees at that level.
So whether it's a truck driver, a gardener, anybody doing any level of customer service, which is everybody, the message has to be framed towards them.
Right. And you want to be creative, and, you know, so you don't sound like a robot, you know. You know, to think of different ways to say, you know, here's the opportunity, here's the picture, here's what you'll get from working with us, here's what we want you to do as an employee to make sure our customers are happy. You say it in different ways. We took the time to do that. One of our clients, customer, well, they called it inside sales. And during the depth of the recession, their competitors lost 50% of their sales. They lost 10. And it's because we were telling the customer all the time in different ways what the value proposition was of our company to them. We kept reminding them. So they never lost track of how valuable working with my client was. And you cannot underestimate this. It is so powerful and so necessary in order to, you know, build, you know, a powerful organization. Now, the next bullet, your job's not done because you've painted a compelling picture and you repeat it all the time. You have to build commitment. You have to really work on people, knowing they're going to forget, knowing life is tough. You don't know what else they've got going on in their life, but you've got to make sure they're committed, not giving you lip service. I mean, your employees are not going to say, oh, rubbish, I'm not going to do that, right? And if they do say that to you, then you've got bigger problems than I thought. But generally, they're going to say, oh, okay, fine, right? But how do you know they're committed? How do you know they get it? And you have to keep probing, watching their behavior, because behavior is going to tell you if they're committed or not. You know, their behavior will uncover their level of commitment. And this is something you got to keep building, because people don't stay committed to things in general. And what's going to happen, and this is a real critical part of what they're committed to. You know, remember I said the why? So why are we doing this? why is it important to do business with us, right? For the employees, how are we going to do it? For the customers, you know, how can you take advantage of our service, right? The why, what, and how. I mean, inscribe that in your brain, everything you say. Particularly when you're going back to build commitment, if you see people are not moving rapidly in the direction you want them to move in, they must not understand why this is important. I don't think people hold back on purpose, you know, to spite you. I just think they don't realize how important it is. And so, like everyone else, they get distracted. You know, they got day-to-day things to do. They got meaningless activities to do. They got their to-do list, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have to make sure that to-do list is driving all the key elements that will build commitment in the company with the customers, that will build their internal commitment. And until they get why, they will not be committed. And again, it fades like everything else. You know, why are you committed to this? Will fade over time, over a 2 to 3 week period, and you have to keep people focused. You know, I have one client right now where they're so busy, I brought them off site, you know, for a strategic off site, and they were so busy, they didn't have time to spend 2 days, right, figuring out what their business strategy should be. And as I got into it, I realized they were busy doing things that didn't lead to the outcomes we needed them to get. They had all these to-do lists. They always fill up with meaningless things. And as leaders, we have to keep them focused on the high-return activities. We have to keep them committed to the big stuff. And it's hard for people. People want to get distracted. People want to do something that's easy. People want to fill their day with activities. As a leader, you've got to keep them focused on the high return activities and make sure there is not a lot of time wasters on the to-do list. I just can't tell you how important that is. It might sound obvious. It might sound simple. But if you don't do it, people will drift off into whatever comes up in front of them. You know, problems that are not directly related to increasing revenue or increasing EBITDA tend to creep into the day-to-day activities. And then your employees or even your leaders are saying, well, we don't have time for this. We don't have time for that. Well, that's not a good answer. You've got to have time for the high-priority strategic things that that go forward. And it takes this kind of persistence on the part of leaders to do that. Now, what shouldn't you be doing? And this is as important as what you should do, the don'ts. And, you know, the first one is increased sales by 20 million is not a compelling picture of what you want them to do. It is the outcome of what you want them to do. The numbers, the profits, the revenue are not compelling pictures. People can't use a revenue target as a reason to be committed. Particularly if it's a privately held company and no one has stock options, a revenue target only means the people owning the company are going to make more money. That's not a compelling picture. How do you convert the numbers into a series of compelling pictures and commitments that will generate the numbers? It is not enough just to say, you know, this year we're going to do 25 million instead of 20. Okay, what does that look like? How are we going to do that? Why are we going to increase? Why are the customers going to come to us now for an additional 5 million? all of those things have to be answered in people's minds for them to get committed. The numbers alone are, sure, it means a lot to the CFO, it means a lot to the CEO. And you can't ignore them. I mean, it's the score card, if you will. But what's important is what happens before the sales hit the top line. Right? I mean, what compelling picture, what actions, what commitments will draw people in, will draw customers into the top line? And then, likewise, internally, what compelling pictures, what level of commitment will keep the employees, you know, focused on, you know, running the business profitably, efficiently, and, you know, keeping the customers happy. That is the biggest mistake most leaders make. Well, we're going to do $125 million this year. Aren't you excited? Well, probably not. And sure, if you have a good incentive system and people get a bonus if they hit those targets, that's valuable. But it's still not going to tell them why or what or how we're going to get there. Have to have that. Otherwise, number is just a number. It doesn't have, you know, concrete meaning. Now, here's another don't for the new millennium. Command and control leadership. You're just, the world out there today in business is way too complex for any one person to have all the answers. The culture out there amongst the millennials and the Xers, they are much more collaborative than us. I'm a boomer. They require collaboration just for motivation. But more important is, one, the complexity of most businesses, market dynamics, the financial dynamics. You need, you know, my grandmother always used to say, two heads is better than one. Well, it's true. Okay? The two heads is better than one. And this command and control leadership style, I have a client, and he runs about half of a very large company, and he was having some real problems with a number of his employees. And so he says to me, he's a former Marine. Those of you who are Marines, don't take offense. He says, well, I wouldn't be in a foxhole with that guy. You know, I don't trust him. I don't trust him to cover my back. And so there's a whole group of people in the company that he didn't trust, he didn't like, and he told them, right? Well, what I explained to him is, first of all, you're not in a foxhole. This is not Mortal Kombat. We're running a business here. It's not Mortal Kombat. So just back off here. You know, not everybody's been through boot camp and been trained as a Marine. There are some civilians that, you know, have never even been in the service. So, you know, this command and control thing is so old and angers people so much and is so dangerous. Unless you're omniscient. Now, if you know everything, let's say you were omniscient and you knew all the answers. You still can't do everything. Your employees are there to take the actions that are needed to build the business. And if they're always waiting for you to tell them what to do, you become a bottleneck. You need to have that, go back to the do's, the compelling picture of the kind of outcomes you want them all to do. You need to keep repeating that, but let them do it. You know, if they're not hitting their targets, you know, then you have to coach them, you got to work with them. But, you know, beware of this old command and control style. It doesn't work anymore because of our culture. But more important, you want to sort through the complexity of your business by using all the minds in your company. And two, you want people to understand why they're doing things, what they're supposed to be doing, and how to do it. And if you don't have some kind of collaborative relationship with your team, they're not going to understand that. And they're just going to be doing things because you told them to do it. And if something changes out there, they're going to keep doing what you told them to do, regardless of the fact that the market's changing or something really important that's out there changing. You want them to have a target in their mind that they can then be flexible to achieve as things change around them. They know what the target is. They know what the mission is. They understand why. They understand how. And they understand what. So if things change while you're in New York or out of town, they know what to do. If they don't know what to do, if they don't have that picture, if they don't have that mission, if they're afraid to do anything without checking with you, it's going to slow business down and your competitors are just going to jump all over you. You're not going to be effective. I remember at New York Life, which this is in the 80s, in the mid-80s, when I first got there and we did a culture assessment. We're always looking for a phrase that typifies the culture. And for New York Life it was, there is no decision too small for the executive management committee. Right? So, and it also took about 6 months to get on the executive management committee's schedule. And by the time they got on the schedule and the committee debated and thought about it for 6 months, whatever that product was, the competitors were already deep in the market, taking market share. And we're still going through our command and control process. You've got to avoid this. And I know it's difficult. I know people do, you know, stupid things, and sometimes you get tired of explaining to them, this is the way to do it, this is what's important. You just want to tell them, do it or else. You just have to develop patience. You have to understand their thinking. You have to understand why they're doing things and change that. You know, change their why, change their thought process for going forward. So they are part of the team. It's seamless. You don't have to lean on your, the company doesn't have to lean on your wisdom. You don't become a bottleneck. Now, the other side of the coin, of course, before we go to the next bullet, is you need people who know their job and know the business to collaborate with. It doesn't do any good to collaborate with a group of idiots, right? This is not a client yet, but the CEO is telling me some of the problems. And most of the management team talks about their employees like they're a bunch of idiots. And they need leading. And, well, you have to ask yourself, why did you hire a bunch of idiots? You know, so you know, you're accountable for everybody who's in that company. So, you know, if you do have people you're collaborating with that are thick as bricks, then, you know, you've got the wrong team. You got to have people who know their jobs, who know their responsibilities and can respond.
Hey, Paul, a question just came in. How long ago did command and control leadership go out of style?
It went out of style in the 70s and the 80s.
Oh, a long time ago. Okay.
A long time ago. Position power died, started to die in the 60s, it began to die, and in the 80s it was just about over. But there are still people who are operating in that mode today. And it seems easier, but it's not. You're not going to get the results that you think. But, you know, it died a long time ago. We didn't notice it, though. See, habit. You're fighting habit. We're all creatures of habit. And there are good habits and there are bad habits. And once you develop a habit in the past, and the worst ones, like I said earlier, are the ones that worked for you. If they worked for you in the past, now things are changing dramatically. Those habits are just going to drive you into a hole.
Right? So another question just came in on that. How do you know when something is from the – it's worked in the past. I'm trying to reframe this. When it worked in the past, but maybe it's outdated today from a leadership management standpoint.
Okay, one big hint is if it worked before the financial crisis, it probably won't work today. The dynamics are so different. Those of you who have P&L responsibilities know it's really hard to get the bank to lend more money when you make a mistake. The whole competitive environment has ramped up dramatically since then. Our competitors in Asia and Europe have gained strength, and we're still struggling. That's one obvious way to know. The other way to know is it's not working. You know, it's the definition of insanity, right? So if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and it's not working, you have to be relentless about questioning your assumptions. You have to be relentless about challenging yourself and your team, you know, your leadership team. You need to challenge each other because you can't do that in a command and control environment because people are afraid they're going to lose their job. But if you challenge it, right?
Yes. Another question. Any sources of books or places to go on the internet to find ideas of how to self-challenge constantly?
There was a book called Ferocious Conversations, which is kind of the classic book about this topic. But here's the bottom line. If you look at, you know, I got a client who hates confrontation. Hates. So when he was trying to hire me, he said, well, you know, I don't want to have confrontation. Can you work with my team so they won't confront each other and so everything's nice? And I said, no, because that would destroy your company. And he said, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Here's how you create the future. That's my new book, by the way. So one is two opposing points of view. Once they're combined and discussed, a third point of view will come up, which is much more creative than any of the two opposites. I mean, it's the foundation of life, isn't it? Two opposites, a man and a woman, you would consider opposites, right? Come together and they create a child. Chemistry, you combine two chemicals and create a third. It's all about taking opposites, melding them into a third position. That's power. That's how you create the future. You can't create the future by having it just be your command and your control. Can't create the future, on the other hand, by collaborating and not facing, you know, difficult realities with each other. You've got to build a team of people who are willing to challenge each other. You've got to challenge yourself. You know, I challenge myself all the time. Is the leadership practices that I'm teaching, are they working? Are they right? You know, I study, I observe how things go, and I make adjustments to the way I do a team building, the way I coach a CEO, the way we do a strategic planning meeting. It's really different today than it was even 4 years ago, just because of the nature of business, the nature of people that I'm working with. And lastly, you know, don't take your eye off the present. You know, you can have that compelling picture. You can have your mission, your strategy, you're going forward. When something in the marketplace changes, everything shifts. You know, the market is very dynamic. Things are changing faster than ever. I know we've been saying, you know, change is the only constant since the 60s, right? And that is still true today. The only difference is change is more complex and moving faster, much faster, much more complex. It's a global world. Even if you're just working in local markets, I have a client who is kind of the Kleenex of their business. And, of course, China's coming in with products now and underpricing them. And, you know, it's just a reality. It's complex. You have to collaborate. It's fast. You have to keep your eye on the ball. Could be a curveball instead of a slider coming at you. And if you don't have a method then to see what's actually happening out in front of you, out in front of your business, you're not constantly challenging your own assumptions, you know, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to end up doing things that are not effective, and sometimes things that are, you know, completely fatal. So the present moment moves with the momentum of cause and effect, and that cause and effect, you're not going to change it. I always say to my clients, when you want to invent the future and paint a compelling picture of the future, imagine out here in California, a lot of my clients have been surfers as young men and women. So like a surfer sits out in the ocean and looks back for a good wave to catch. And once they catch that good wave and get up on the board, the sweet spot on the wave is different for somebody who weighs 200 pounds and someone who weighs 140, first of all. The sweet spot on the wave is different for a skilled surfer than it is for an amateur. But there is always a sweet spot on that wave that will maximize forward progress that you can create from. And the same is true with the market. You got to keep your eye on the present. What is the wave of momentum that is emerging in your business? You got a client right now, that was the assignment I gave him. So what is the wave that's emerging in your business, the wave of cause and effect, the wants and needs of your clients, the technical changes in your industry? What's happening out there? You can't stay stuck. Look at BlackBerry. You know, they're just about ready to go out of business. And one of their loyal guys said to me, well, all I use it for is email now anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And somebody at BlackBerry should have made some big changes a couple of years ago, and they didn't. And so now they're facing bankruptcy. So you got to watch that. Watch the waves of cause and effect that are coming into your marketplace and be ready to change and shift and, you know, catch the wave that best drives you forward. So those are some of the do's and don'ts, the big ones.
Oh, that's great. That, Paul, could you summarize for leaders, for managers, for supervisors that are attending today, three do's. Three do's they should think about immediately, and talk it over with their senior management team to get their teams moving, not necessarily in a better direction, but just to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I think you better be challenging your assumptions for success in your business. If you're not growing rapidly and having a hard time keeping up with increased sales and increased business, something isn't right, and you got to be willing to challenge it. You got to be willing to put your ego aside, which is really hard, but you have to, or you're going to be eaten alive out there. You know, that'd be one. Challenge those assumptions. Two, always be looking at the market. Always be getting surveys from your customers. Always be asking how we can be more effective. Always look for that wave, if you will, that's coming forward in the market. And three, you know, don't forget that people forget. You got to keep repeating that mission statement, that compelling picture, and if it changes, you got to develop another one and make sure everybody understands why you're changing it and what they need to do.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Paul, and when is your new book coming out? What's the title?
It's called Invent Your Future, and it should be coming out in the summer.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
In just a few minutes, when we conclude this program, I'm going to turn off the recording equipment so we can open up the line and you can talk directly with Paul. And we've been asked by attendees in the past to not record voices, and that's why we're doing that. Paul, could you advance a slide, please? One slide. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming 20th anniversary Open Line Talent Strategies Week programs, advanced sourcing, getting top talent through social networking, the workforce of the future, 10 things to consider today, and are your salespeople an issue or is it something else? So you can click on there and register for all three of them if you'd like. And if you'd like other individuals in your organization to attend, just register them. Love to have everybody. In just a few days, you'll receive a recording and a PowerPoint for today's program. And please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Again, I'm going to open the line in just a second. I just need to close this part of the program down. Paul and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Paul to further discuss specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time or discuss any ideas that were shared today, Paul's contact information is on the screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, just let us know, and that's how this topic came about. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line programs. Hold the line. Have a great day, and Paul's going to be on in just 1 second. Let me turn everything off here.